This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, September 27th, the Norris Group proudly presents its 12th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce and Aaron Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, massive tech disruption, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event is not possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club, Think Realty, Coach Fullerton, Keller Williams Corona, Property Radar, The Apartment Owners Association, MVT Productions, and Realty 411. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris and Bruce Norris here today, and something we never think to do. I Survive Real Estate is next week, and typically within 3 or 4 weeks after that, we have our annual financial tactics breakfast. This is our 9th year, which is very difficult to believe, and it's, I think, become more popular over time. We started producing it on Amazon Prime. If you're a member, you can see past events that we've done, and it's by far the most sophisticated thing we do when it comes to estate planning. I always learn a ton. So with us today, we have Karin Hall with UDirect IRA, longtime friend, board member at the Retirement Industry Trust Association. We have an account with her. And then we've got Matt McFarland and Amanda Hahn with Keystone CPA. Real estate all-stars when it comes to CPAs working with real estate investors. So thank you guys for being here. Awesome to have you.
Thank you.
So, Dad, should you want to start it off?
Sure. I want to add that I learn something every time that I go. And that's, you know, I mean, it seems like I've been through a fair amount of stuff. So you'd think, okay, well, I have it kind of wired, but I don't. There's always something new. And then there's things that change.
Yeah. Well, and if people have never seen the show, what we've sort of landed on over the last couple of years is we don't cover the basics. You should not go if you don't know anything about things like 1031 exchanges or how to set up a trust. The first hour and a half is each of our, what we sort of make a joke during the advertising is like, hey, you know, a CPA, an attorney, and an IRA walk into a bar. It sounds like a joke, but whenever you meet with those professionals individually, you typically get said like, oh, I can't answer that. You need to speak to, you know, A, B, or C. Well, having everybody on stage updating us on things that are happening in the industry, regulatory-wise, legislative-wise, tax-wise, and then the last hour and a half, what people don't know, not all of it ends up online because some of it becomes very inappropriate. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, what you just asked, that's illegal. You shouldn't do that. So, yeah, I always learn a ton, and it's extremely valuable. So, I don't know why they do it, but they keep coming back for more, and we're in year 9, so it's fun.
I think a good book would be Tricks You're Not Allowed to Use with Your IRA or something like that.
Yeah, Matt and Amanda can talk about this one. It's called, yeah, somebody started that, and no, the IRS doesn't allow it.
Anyway.
Amanda, maybe that's book number 3 with bigger pockets, sort of like a IRS private letter rulings for real estate investors. What do you think?
Yeah, I like that.
She's taking notes. I was like, okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Karin, I've got a question for you. I think I was pretty late in the game realizing I could do things inside of a retirement account with real estate. And I didn't know it was 10 seminars, and so that's my fault. But I have a friend, Rick Solis. You guys know him. He has a lot of his stuff in an IRA because he planned that out. So how long has that been possible to do alternative assets in IRAs? And what percentage of people actually do it?
I can touch on that. This is Karin. You've been able to self-direct your IRA ever since IRAs were created. You know, and then for that, you've got to go back to Gerald Ford, 1974. Wow. The ERISA laws were created, the Employment Retirement Income Security Act. So that went to effect in 1975. So what's that, 44 years? You know, a long time you've been able to self-direct. And people, well, I mean, a lot of people are familiar with it now more than certainly before, but still plenty of people are saying, oh, is that something new? And no, it's not new at all, not new at all.
Is there, and maybe this is outside of the scope and it's Harry Barth's world, but when you have money in a retirement account, is it bulletproof from lawsuits, or is that a misconception?
Yeah, and we can let Harry touch on this. It's a great teaser for Coming to the Punch, because you'll hear from Harry. But what Harry's told me, you know, is that there's some retirement money that may have ERISA protection. And what I mean by that is there's something called the anti-alienation provision. We informally call it the OJ clause. Like, why did OJ Simpson still have his NFL pension, right? It's because pensions and, you know, plans that are employer plans have this anti-alienation provision, and it's protection from creditors. So sometimes when that money moves from an ERISA plan into an IRA, it retains its ERISA protection. And Harry will go deep on this during the brunch. So otherwise, an IRA, especially in California, does not essentially have this kind of asset protection. But it could if the money came over from an ERISA plan.
Now, just one more extension of that. A lot of people start doing real estate investing inside their retirement accounts, and they create an LLC, a checkbook LLC. Can you explain to us what that is?
Yeah, and it's funny. It's kind of like the word Kleenex. You know, it doesn't really mean anything, but it's a brand name, and that's what a checkbook IRA is. If you go to the IRS's website and you type in checkbook IRA, and nothing comes up because it's just a jargon term. But what it really is an IRA-owned LLC, and that LLC is not just, you know, it's not like you just go to like LegalZoom.com or something and type it in yourself, because first off, you can't do that. But it's a special purpose LLC. It has special language saying that it's set up just for the IRA. And Harry and Keystone can go deep on this, but it's a pass-through entity. So if it's a single-member LLC, it's not paying income tax. What it's doing is it passes through. But of course, if you're in California, you still get to pay $800 a year to the Franchise Tax Board for the privilege. But all that said, you know, all the foundation of what it is, what it does is your IRA owns this asset called this, you know, IRA-owned LLC. The money goes in the LLC, and now you get to write checks for assets or asset-related expenses for your IRA. And as long as you steer clear of what's called prohibited transactions, and we can go deep on that at another time, but if you steer clear of prohibited transactions, then you're fine. Then you're fine, because if you ever get audited and the IRS looks at that, they're going to see, hey, are there any prohibited transactions in this LLC? So you just want to steer clear of that.
We've been doing hard money loans for self-directed IRAs for some time, but there's very few people that use them. And maybe Matt and Amanda, I love last year, by the way, we got to talk about 1031 exchanges inside IRAs because of the tax ramification, because leverage was taken inside the IRA. So yeah, it makes your mind, makes your eyes cross a little bit. But on the whole, do you see, Matt or Amanda, do you see real estate investors being very risky inside these accounts right now?
We see a lot of clients using IRAs to invest probably more in harder assets, I guess, than like notes or trustee lending like you're referring to. And I don't know if that's just because that's maybe more what they understand or think they understand, or maybe they just don't know they can do lending in the IRA and never lent before. I don't know. So it's kind of hard to say, I guess.
I like to be conservative in mine, so I don't take anything. I don't like leverage in my Roth. I'll pass.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Most people we see in terms of assets and retirement accounts are for either directly owned real estate or an equity ownership in an LLC or, you know, something like that, like a syndication. that owns real estate. Although we try to encourage our clients who invest in notes and trustees to, you know, consider using retirement money rather than their cash. So, you know, if you're someone who wants to have rentals but also wants to invest in notes, then you know, oftentimes it's more beneficial to use self-directed money in retirement to buy note investments and then use your cash for real estate. And the reason for that is purely from a tax perspective. When you're a note investor, there's generally not a lot of expenses. So we don't have repairs, we don't have management fees, we don't have depreciation because we don't own the real estate. And interest income, on the other hand, that we make from a note investment is taxed at ordinary rates. So, you know, because note investment is generally, an asset that doesn't have a lot of expenses, it could make sense to consider retirement account because it's already, you know, tax deferred or tax free anyway by design.
A lot of tax law changes last year. So this is to Matt or Amanda. Who were the big beneficiaries of the changes and who didn't get much?
Do you want to take this one?
Well, that's fine. So from doing a lot, we just finished a lot of business returns that were extended to September 15th. We're working on the individuals now that have been extended. But yeah, a lot of the people that I think that are benefiting from the changes are real estate investors, but then also people that have, businesses, but lack of a better term, like select businesses. So not accountants, not lawyers, not like service businesses, but we have clients that are real estate agents, they have marketing companies, just to name a few that are benefiting a lot from the law changes in terms of getting deductions that they didn't, get before, and some of their money is totally tax-free now. So those seem to be the big winners with respect to changes that happened at the end of 2017.
Yeah. And I would say the biggest losers, I hate to use that word, but I guess the people who benefited the least, or had, laws that are less favorable to them.
That's a nicer way to put it. Yeah. Yes.
The biggest loser, sneak peek for tax French. So I think it probably, unfortunately, as you might have guessed, are just, regular W-2 income earners who don't invest in real estate or who don't have other businesses on the side. So a lot of the deductions that we saw being taken away, are with respect to, expenses relating to W-2 or, limits on primary home and, just on the personal side. So, yeah, I think, just that the government has always incentivized taxpayers to invest in real estate and start businesses. And tax reform, just kind of further supports that, that concept.
Karin, if you want to set aside money in retirement accounts, I know there's all kinds of limits. What type of business or entity gets to contribute most to a retirement account, and who can contribute the least?
All right. Well, with retirement accounts, when it comes to we're talking about a 401k. When it comes to a business, if say for example, well, we provided a solo 401k for a business that has no employees, full-time employees. So for the 401k, and also for something called a SEP, a Simplified Employment Plan, in 2019, the contributions increased. It used to be you could contribute $55,000 a year, and now it is $56,000 a year, or 25% of your income. It's a lesser of. So that is if you have a SEP IRA or a solo 401k. So again, we've seen the contribution limits increase in 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019. It's been clicking up every year. I mean, even going back even further. I mean, when we started this 9 years ago, you could put $49,000 in. So it keeps increasing. But again, we're talking about a solo 401k. We're talking about a SEP IRA. There's also something called a simple IRA. It's almost fading out because it's more complicated to administer and the benefits aren't as great as the other two I previously mentioned.
Well, then that's false advertising. Get it? Simple IRA?
Yeah. Yeah, when the government calls something simple, you can pretty much guess that it isn't. But it's an acronym, of course.
Are there any surprise changes, Matt and Amanda, first for the coming up for the tax year 2020, or is that even decided yet? Because sometimes they create laws that actually are retroactive.
What are you talking about? They never do that.
I'm not aware of any upcoming things that, you know, that might be surprises. But I think, you know, with respect to Opportunity Zone tax benefits, which came out in 2018, even today the IRS is, you know, we're still waiting for the IRS to define certain things and really clarify how things will work, what needs to happen in order to get some tax benefits, which, you know, we'll touch on during the upcoming brunch. But yeah, I think some of those things might be, you know, maybe surprises because, you know, we think when they say you know, if you make improvements, this is what you'll get. And if they come out later to define, well, improvements means this or, you know, things like that, then that could change how, you know, how things are done in order to capture any tax benefits. But I think we'll see more of that in the coming years in terms of clarifying what things mean. You know, under tax reform, there was a brand new benefit for lots of businesses, and certain businesses didn't get the tax break. So it'll be interesting to find out, you know, exactly. Obviously, the IRS was not able to define every single business that was eligible or ineligible. So with a lot of our clients, we kind of have to make a guess, you know, where are you comfortable? Do you feel like you fit into the eligible or non-eligible category? So I think we'll see more of that as, you know, court cases come out or new information is released from the IRS to, you know, provide more detail on who's eligible for a tax break and who is not.
You know, one of the laws that's still in place that that really shocks me is the $500,000 tax-free exclusion for a joint ownership, for a sale of your residence. Any changes? If that law is still exactly the way it was, and do you think that's going to stay?
Yeah, it's currently the same way it is. It has been for a while. It's still that, you know, a married couple can exclude $500,000 of gain if they've, you know, lived and used in the house for two of the previous 5 years. It had been on the table to at least change it when they came out of the tax reform bill 2 years ago, but at some point they took it off the table because I think they were going to change it to you had to live in it 5 out of the previous 8 years or something like that. But yeah, like Amanda said, I haven't heard anything that they're going to change it or that it's on the table to be changed again, but you know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, right?
No.
Karna, in the IRA world, there's something, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Continue with your, and I'll follow up with another question.
Yeah, sorry. I just want to jump in because there's something on the horizon in the IRA world, and it's, you know, and that doesn't always happen because the IRA world is pretty stable. But on May 23rd, the House of Representatives, the House Ways and Means Committee, passed the SECURE Act, which is another acronym for setting every community up for retirement enhancement. And what it's looking to do is raise, do you like that?
Yeah, I wonder, they probably had a committee for a year working on that one.
They have an they have an acronym division. Yeah.
And so here's another acronym. It's RMD. You know, that's required minimum distribution. And this is what the SECURE Act is doing, is looking to raise that RMD. I mean, we're living longer. And so instead of having to take money out of your pre-tax retirement accounts at 70 and a half, they want to raise it to 72 and then incrementally go on up to 75 years old where your RMD phase begins. So that's passed the House. It needs to pass the Senate, which it hasn't done yet. So we'll see. That's something to be looking for on the horizon.
You know, that's so funny because honestly, that was the question.
Really?
It really was. I had written down a question. At what age do you have to take? And are they considering extending it because people are getting older? That was my exact question. Now, I know this isn't in the world that we were typically going to. I wonder if they're going to do that for Social Security, because right now you have to take it at 70, but the same thing could apply, except for it kind of grows at an 8% rate after you're eligible. So that's a pretty good return if you don't need it.
Mm. And if you get negative interest rates, that's definitely good.
That assumes that people... Yeah, that assumes that people buy the premise that it's going to be around for them to get that return,
oh.
Right?
Yeah, I guess I was making that assumption. Thank you very much. Yes, you're not old enough to, you know. Well, fortunately, you know, there are.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate here. I don't have an opinion. I'm just throwing it out there.
Well, pretty soon it won't matter how much we owe because we'll pay negative interest rates on it, so it'll be fine.
I wanted to ask you all a question we can do roundtable. I've been taking a lot of phone calls lately of investors wanting to leave the state. And what's unusual is that it's not just because they're afraid of a recession. Increasingly, they're uncomfortable with the politics of California and the uncertainty, I think, of the politics in combination with the recession. It's all very cute and fine, maybe when the sun is shining and California is doing well in the economy. But I definitely get the sense that investors are getting out and not just because of the economy. Karin, do you get a lot more phone calls with that concern? You see people making a move?
Personally, I see, like, the real estate investors, I know I do see a lot of people migrating out of state. We all do. And I hear from, you know, realtor friends of mine, like, how many of their recent listings are from people leaving the state? And I don't have a hard and fast statistic, but I know it's quite a number of them. But we still see a lot of people investing in real estate in California. There's still deals to be made. And of course, you know, I have OC Riad, our real estate investment club, and we are talking every month about doing real estate deals in California. So that's never going to stop. But we do see, yes, migration outside the state.
Matt and Amanda, how are people feeling as they're talking to you? Are you seeing a lot of tears this month?
So from our client's perspective, yes. That's one of the questions when we do, you know, planning with a brand new client. One of the questions I always ask is, you know, do you foresee yourself in California, you know, in the long run, you know, just from a planning perspective? And yeah, I'm hearing a lot more people over these last year or two saying that, no, you know, once they sell their business or once they sell their real estate or stop working full time, the goal is to no longer be a California resident. I mean, from, you know, from the tax perspective, of course, the state tax rate is very high. You know, Cara mentioned earlier, the LLC. So for legal entities in California, that's a high cost, you know, every single year. And of course, with the, you know, proposed legislations on, you know, just having more strict or costly rules coming out for investors, I think a lot of people are looking to exit California. But I think people always have to have the, you know, that same question for Bruce, right? When should I get out? Should I sell my properties? You know, where should I reinvest? Hopefully those are things that they'll hear at the brunch.
You know, what's interesting is rent control just occurred, and I don't recall getting to vote on that. When we did get a chance to vote on it, we said no.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's a yes. And that's pretty uncomfortable because you kind of go, okay, well, what else do we not get to vote on? Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, yeah, it's definitely an issue.
Was that a sigh?
Yeah, everyone's silent because we're just all crying and dying a little bit inside. So,
I think we get to vote on a recall. I'm going to throw that out there.
I think that was, well, I don't know how many of us would even be on that side of it. It's just, well, oh well.
Well, we've only got about a minute left. I definitely want to say if you're interested in finding out more about the brunch, you can go to thenorrisgroup.com and look under our calendar tab. And this is something we do every year. And this is most of the crew, but we also have Dino Champagne. She's the vice president of asset preservation. She's there representing sort of the 1031 exchange world. And then we've got Harry Barth with Barth Calderon Attorneys. So you sort of got a plethora of experience on the stage talking about all things estate planning. And it does get a little bit sophisticated, but I always walk away learning quite a bit. So I'm excited to see what we come up with this year.
Me too. And you know what? Everybody should know that the people that are on the panel are people that we trust and do business with too.
Yeah. So any last words before we say till next month, you guys?
No, looking forward to it. Thanks.
Yeah, same here. I think I always learn something when I go to the brunch myself, too. So looking forward to presenting and looking forward to learning.
Yeah, great chance to sharpen the skills, you know, and plus the venue is so great. I love the Center Club and valet parking, and it's a beautiful place. So And it's also a great chance to see a lot of old friends too from the investing community.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, with that, hopefully we'll get to see you in a month. I think we're going to sell out a little bit earlier than we do this year. I've had some investors showing up for the first time, and I actually called one and said, you've never wanted this before. And they said, it's because I'm finally making some moves and I'm leaving California.
Wow.
So I think we'll get to cover a lot of great stuff. So thanks and have a great day, you guys.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE license 01219911, Florida mortgage lender license 1577, and NMLS license 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the hard money tab.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South RIA, Michael Ryan and Associates, NorCal RIA, NSDREI, Orange County Real Estate Investors, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Shenbaum Group, SJREI, Spinnaker Loans, South OC RIA, UDirect IRA Services, White House Catering, Wilson Investment Properties. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event information.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.